Welcome to the final Issue Is podcast before the March 5th primary in California. We have been covering this for over a year now, and here we are. The finish line is in sight. As we get there, it appears like there is a now close race for first between Steve Garvey, the Republican, and Democrat Adam Schiff, which is not necessarily a good thing for Katie Porter, who spent much of this year assuming that she would be in the top two. So we're going to talk about new polling on that, where she goes from here, talk about some of the other big races on the ballot besides the Senate race, talk about a big week in presidential politics, because California's voting on that, too. So we brought in two of our smartest friends to do this. Peter Hamby joins us first. He talks about the Senate race, talks about the presidential race. And then a little bit later, our conversation with Melanie Mason of Politico, who talks to us about some of the California races that are most important to look out for, the smart things to be watching on election night. Let's start things off with Peter Hamby, who is joining us from Puck News and from Snapchat, and our conversation about a Senate poll that woke a lot of people up this week. That's from Berkeley IGS. That shows Steve Garvey at number one.
Welcome back to The Issue Is. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for showing my immense bookshelf there behind me.
I love a good bookshelf. So let's start with the U.S. Senate race, which has always been the biggest race around. And the big story of the last few weeks has been Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff and his spending of over $11 million on ads to lift up Republican Steve Garvey and his campaign for U.S. Senate. Garvey hasn't had any money to spend, so Schiff's done it all for him. Over 60% of Schiff's spend has been talking about Garvey, hoping to lift him into second place in the top two race when the top two advance, regardless of party. And that seems to be working. Look at the latest Berkeley IGS poll, which is respected as probably the best poll in the state. It shows Garvey now at 27%, Schiff at 25%. That's a statistical tie. Democratic Congresswoman Katie Porter back at 19%. And it's interesting also what the poll's saying about who is voting in this race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I feel like I've been on the show a couple times, and the LA Times and Berkeley drop a poll, so thank you to them.
Yeah.
I was talking to a Republican donor in Orange County the other day, but someone in Katie Porter's backyard, and they were just saying, you know, it's really hard to make up like a 4, 5, 6 point gap in the final week before one of these races. And Katie Porter is losing there by 6 points to Schiff. The electorate in this poll, if you look at the crosstabs, is just not good for Katie Porter. And it is good for Garvey, and it is good for Schiff, who has most of the money and probably the biggest name ID. It is an older electorate, a lot of homeowners, not renters, that suggests old. And their voting set is also a little bit older, I think. But also, importantly, almost half of the electorate in this poll is people who define themselves as moderate or somewhat liberal. Only 19% of California voters in this poll say they're very liberal. So not a lot of liberals, not a lot of young people. That's who Katie Porter is targeting. And I mean, her closing message is all over the place. I haven't really even been sure what her message has been the whole time, other than I'm a mom with a whiteboard. But now she's splitting hairs and answering questions from reporters on the trail about corporate PAC donations. She's just not on offense, and that's not where you want to be in the closing days of a campaign.
So we want to show people why Schiff has been doing this strategy, because this poll also has an interesting numbers here. Here's a hypothetical matchup. Schiff, Garvey, November. Schiff starts out up 15 points. He's at 53. Garvey's at 38, about 8% undecided. That's why Schiff wants this matchup. If it is Schiff versus Porter, look at this. Mm-hmm. They're tied at 30% each, 40% undecided. She could clearly beat him. Mm-hmm. I know Schiff's team is concerned about that. That's why they're trying to do this. So I guess the heads up, if you really like Katie Porter, it's time to speak now or forever hold your peace.
Yeah, you got to show up. And that would be an exciting election if you're a Democrat. And, you know, for my criticisms of Katie Porter's lack of a message, she would have time to pivot, have time to raise more money. She's a very good fundraiser. Adam Schiff is probably a better fundraiser at this point. I live in Venice, and an actor I will not name was on the show Wings back in the day. Clearly a registered Democrat. I'm not. I'm an unbiased journalist. I get so much mail from Adam Schiff, and it has been nonstop for years. So even if he does advance the runoff against Porter, I would still say he's the front runner because of the financial advantage. The other thing to keep in mind here is Donald Trump is in the news all the time, but he's in the news a lot in this last week. You know, the Supreme Court is going to hear his case about presidential immunity. He is going to lock up the Republican nomination pretty soon. That helps Schiff because voters think that Adam Schiff is probably the most prominent anti-Trump figure in Congress. So the more Trump is in the news, people are like, oh, I want Adam in the Senate fighting against Mr. Trump.
Well, it seems like Schiff only says two names consistently, Donald Trump and Steve Garvey. And let's talk about Steve Garvey, though, because if he does advance, he hasn't said that much during this primary. We invited him to come on today. He chose not to come on today. Clearly a strategic decision, feeling like they didn't need to. But maybe, could that actually eventually be an advantage for him? The fact that if he was able to consolidate the Republicans, because we know they're never going to vote for Pencilneck, who hates Donald Trump, right? So he's got them.
Yes.
And they're going with him no matter what. They got nowhere else to go. And he's left himself room to be a more moderate, you know, candidate, make it a lot about state issues, try to, you know, run against the establishment of a one-party state. I mean, maybe, possibly, is there a path for Steve Garvey?
A couple things. Let's play devil's advocate. Let's play the Garvey optimist here. One, President Biden is on the ballot in November. Not a lot of Democratic enthusiasm out there, and a lot of voters generally are kind of tuning out the news, tuning out politics. This is a well-documented phenomenon this year. So maybe, even though there's so many more Democrats in this state, maybe in November, people aren't super hyped about Biden or Adam Schiff, who, you know, let's be honest, isn't Mr. Charisma either. Maybe they don't show up, maybe. But I remember being at your debate with Politico, and in the room, people were sort of laughing at Steve Garvey for not taking a position on Trump and a variety of things. But, you know, there's tape of that that can be run in TV ads. But it has positioned him to not be, you know, a raging MAGA guy. That hasn't stopped Democrats before in this state from calling any Republican a MAGA freak show. So we'll see. But, yeah, he's got a little bit of room.
And the other thing, too, that we shouldn't underestimate is the baseball connection with people of a certain age. People that are our age and younger don't have that connection to him in terms of baseball, but the people that are actually voting in this election, largely people over 65, do. And that's a different connection than just a Republican-Democrat thing as well, and they view him as a real celebrity.
Yeah, I mean, the name, even before moving to California, it was my understanding to win elections statewide, you needed a lot of money and you needed a name ID. If you're a Republican, like Steve Poizner or Meg Whitman for Carly Fiorina back in the day, you didn't have that longstanding relationship with voters. Steve Garvey has that name, especially in L.A., especially in San Diego. Remember, he was a Padre, too. If he was younger and a little more nimble, I feel like we would be giving him a little more attention than we are.
And he would have had a really great shot back in 1992.
Exactly.
If he didn't have the scandals back then, but that's a whole other story. Okay, let's talk about, because this electorate is older and more conservative, that's not potentially great news for Proposition 1, which is Governor Newsom's big bond measure, which is focused on mental health. Probably still going to win, but maybe tougher than you thought. And Governor Newsom having a tough week with this story about Panera Bread, which is now in the news. So basically, here's the story. The Governor Newsom signed this bill, which we see here, for a $20 minimum wage for fast food workers. There was a carve out in that bill that said if you make bread at your restaurant and sauce and sell it, you don't have to do that. A lot of people, including Bloomberg, interpreted it as Panera Bread now doesn't have to do this when everybody else does have to do it. Panera Bread franchisee is a big donor to Gavin Newsom, and it looked really bad. Newsom's team coming out and saying, no, that's absurd. That's not true. We actually think they do have to do it. But still, the whole story, not particularly great story about one party control and about special interest power.
Totally. And if Gavin Newsom has liabilities politically, remember the French Laundry thing during the pandemic, it's that, you know, he's a rich out of touch guy who's got his rich friends, he does favors with them, his rules, and then rules for everyone else. This also feels a little bit like a self-inflicted wound on Newsom's part. This Bloomberg story came out on Wednesday suggesting that Panera Bread CEO, Newsom donor, you know, got this carve out. If you read the Bloomberg story carefully, maybe the source was like a labor person from the SEIU who was involved in these negotiations, whatever. If you scroll down like 10 paragraphs, Newsom's office declined to comment. Mm. And so then the story pops, it goes viral. That was 3 days ago, like based on the time we're recording this show. Only today, Friday, did they come out and say, there's no carve out.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. They attacked the Bloomberg story. Like, as a communications failure, this feels a little bit, if there is no carve out, if that's true, which they're saying and their lawyers are saying, that's a communications failure on the part of Newsom's office.
Yeah, and just to be totally technical, they came out with their statement on Thursday afternoon saying that. Okay, so Governor Newsom got his first nickname from Donald Trump this week also.
I don't know if you saw this.
So Donald Trump was at Eagle Pass at the border, and here's what he said.
You look at what this governor, Newsom from California, isn't that his name, Newsom?
So there you go. I guess that means you've made it. If you get that, they before it had a pretty good relationship. We'll see what happens there. But clearly the border is a big issue in the presidential race, which, by the way, California is voting for right now, too, which we're not really talking about.
Yeah.
Biden and Trump both doing dueling visits to different parts of the border where problems were some really bad and not so bad in different areas. Mm-hmm. What do you make of where the presidential race is at right now?
It already is over for Republicans, notionally, but it'll functionally be over on between Super Tuesday and a couple more primaries after that, I think by March 19th. There are 900 delegates available for Republicans, roughly, on Tuesday in 15 different states. The thing that's really important is that California is among these. Most of these states are winner-take-all primaries that are closed to Republicans only. The fact that Nikki Haley has been getting between 30 and 40% in these states, which, by the way, she's getting smoked in these states. But independents and moderates, maybe some former Democrats, were allowed to vote in some of these primaries. That's not going to be the case on Super Tuesday. And so Trump will get, California provides one-fifth, I think, of the Super Tuesday delegates.
More delegates than anywhere else in the country. More Republicans live here than anywhere else in the country.
He's going to win. Winner take all. We know that if the polls are correct, they mostly have been. And then the other thing I'm watching on the Democratic side is after Michigan last week in that primary, there was a uncommitted protest vote against Joe Biden for his support for Israel, their war in Gaza. I don't think that's going to catch fire everywhere necessarily. Michigan is a specific state. But Ann Arbor and East Lansing, college towns in Michigan, they gave Biden a lot of uncommitted votes. So you've got places like California, North Carolina, Virginia, states with a lot of college towns and a lot of young voters. These primaries aren't competitive on the Democratic side, so it's hard to read too much into these things. But I'll be interested to see what Biden's margins are in places like Charlottesville and Raleigh-Durham and Davis, you know.
What is Nikki Haley doing here? What's her end game? What's going on there?
I've known Nikki Haley since 2008. She loves the game, but her time in the sun passed her by the minute Donald Trump became the Republican nominee in 2015. The party changed. Before Trump, she, Chris Christie, Scott Walker, Rick Perry, these were all rising stars in the party, Marco Rubio. You know, she went into the Trump administration. People ask me this all the time because I covered South Carolina politics a lot. She's got nothing else to do. You know, she has to go home at some point. She would prefer to go home with a new reputation, book deal, speaking bookings, you know, maybe a TV contract. She's not going to be the VP. Trump doesn't like her. The Republican Party, as I just mentioned, regular Republican voters don't like her. Her negatives have gone only up in the last couple months among Republicans. So, you know, maybe CNN contract, maybe a book deal. Who knows? Maybe she's preserving something for herself in the long run, but I don't see a future for her in the Republican Party.
And interestingly, on the night of Super Tuesday, she will be in South Carolina, which is not actually voting. So maybe that'll be the end. We'll see. Interesting thing also happening is what's happening with third parties, which is very rarely talked about on mainstream media, even though it's really talked about online. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., last weekend, you went out to Costa Mesa, where they hosted the Libertarian Conference. You talked to him. He was sort of putting his foot in the pool a little bit about whether to get an endorsement from them. What did you see?
RFK Jr. is polling pretty well among constituencies that Joe Biden needs, young people and black voters in swing states. We've seen this in poll after poll after poll. I think he takes little from Trump, takes little from Biden, but I think if you look at the polling, probably hurts Biden a little more. His issue is ballot access. He's on the ballot in Utah. His campaign says he has enough signatures to get on the ballots in New Hampshire and Hawaii, a huge political battleground, as we know. A super PAC supporting him said they have enough signatures to get on the ballot in Georgia and Arizona, which are very important swing states. That's bad news for Biden. But he needs to get on ballots. And so he's doing this big signature campaign. As a backstop, he was flirting with the Libertarian Party, which is on the ballot in like 36 states. I was down there with him in Orange County. These were purebred, small government libertarians who loved the gold standard and, you know, Ron Paul. They did not like him. He gave a speech. Some of his comments landed about the commons and his fights against the state over vaccines. But they did a straw poll at the end. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. got one vote in the presidential straw poll. This is the California Libertarian Convention. But that just suggests, you know, his flirtation with the Libertarian Party isn't going to work out over the next few months. So he's got to get on ballots some other way than the Libertarian Party.
And can you get on the ballot here easily?
I looked it up the other day. I think it's 75,000 validated signatures to get on the ballot. But he has to form a political party here to get on the ballot. He can't just, like, sign up and get on the ballot as Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I think. So there's certain states, I think there's six states, including California, where he's formed a party called We the People, and they're working it in certain states. It just depends. Every state's different for ballot access. After Ross Perot came out of nowhere in 1992, you know, the process became a lot harder. The establishment parties were like, whoa, we can't have this happen again. So it's hard to get on the ballot.
There are very few things that both parties agree on, Democrats and Republicans, but one of the only things they do is they don't like third parties.
Nope.
They want to keep the system going the way that it is, and they work together to try to stop people from messing
with the Democratic National Committee currently is suing Robert F. Kennedy's super PAC. They've hired staffers to go after RFK Jr. on the communications front. Like, they are working it to make sure he's not on the ballot and a threat to Joe Biden.
Yeah, and a third party would probably be a threat. Not for him necessarily winning, but at least for changing up the whole dynamics. Up next, Melanie Mason is going to fill us in on some of the top local races.
Our thanks to Peter Hamby. Now to our conversation with Melanie Mason of Politico, which happened the day before that poll came out. Well, we were looking at Emerson College poll, which showed a closer race for second place. So we'll see, of course, what ends up being the final total. Ultimately, it's up to the voters. So we talked to her about the Senate race and the dynamics there, which are a little different than when we talked to Peter, because things have changed a little bit. But she also opens up about a lot of other races in California that are really interesting and important. So here is Melanie Mason.
Melanie Mason is back with us, just as much pressure. Great to see you. Welcome back to The Issue Is.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So what I hope we can do with this segment is basically walk you through some of the biggest races on the ballot as you are deciding and try to answer a lot of those questions that people text me and call me with. So let's start, Melanie, though, with the U.S. Senate race. We got some new poll out of Emerson College on that basically shows Adam Schiff is at 28%, way ahead, Steve Garvey at 20%, Katie Porter at 17%, 17% still undecided. But basically in all the polls, we've seen Schiff out ahead, this battle between Garvey and Porter for second place, sort of within the margin of error, but kind of trending towards Steve Garvey. How do you see this race right now?
I think that the dynamics that we've seen set since October when Garvey jumped into this race have really sort of followed this trajectory. And so sure enough, you've seen the Republican vote, and there's a substantial Republican vote in California, for as much as we say it's a blue state. As they started to get to know Steve Garvey, as they got signals that Steve Garvey was their candidate, with a lot of help from Adam Schiff and his campaign, you started to see that coalescing. And so this battle for second place that we've been paying attention to for all of these months, really between Congresswoman Porter and Steve Garvey, I think that we're seeing Garvey get that advantage of the Republican voters coming home. And because you have a Republican primary and not a Democratic one on the ballot, there's even more of an excuse for Republican voters to come out and vote, and Democrats maybe to be a little bit less enthused.
And so the big question, I think, right now in determining whether it's going to be Garvey or Porter is, who is going to be the electorate? who shows up to vote, is it a more Democratic electorate or is it a more Republican electorate? And that probably is going to be the difference in these final days. And now another question I think a lot of people have is they see that for Senate, you have to vote twice. So here's the deal on that. LaFonza Butler was appointed to fill Dianne Feinstein's seat, and she's only filling it till November, because that's as far as they could do this legally without calling a special election. So somebody's going to potentially be in that job for a few months, but people can vote twice, right?
Right. You'll see the same candidates on the ballot for those two slots. And essentially, yes, you're voting for who is going to serve from November to January of 2025, and then who actually serves the full six-year term, really is the full successor to the late Senator Dianne Feinstein.
And wouldn't it be something if it was two different people?
It's happened. There's been precedent in Sacramento. I've seen it happen. So
yeah. All right. So you get to vote for your same favorite person twice if that's who you want to vote for. Let's talk about some of the other races that are happening, congressional races. The one that I think most state political reporters are looking at the closest is California 22. This is 22nd District. David Valadao is in that race. He is the Republican incumbent. Remember, he voted to impeach Donald Trump. So has a MAGA challenger named Chris Mathis, who is running. There are also two Democrats running, Rudy Salas and Melissa Hurtado. And the question is either one of those Democrats going to make it in this top two? Because things are complicated sometimes with the top two system.
The top two system lends itself to a lot of shenanigans, and we're actually seeing sort of shenanigans on both sides of the equation, but it's definitely the Democrats that are feeling the most nervous. They have this candidate, Rudy Salas, who the establishment has coalesced around. He ran in 22 against Valadao. The DCCC endorsed him, which they don't typically do in primaries, and sort of said, that's our guy. But you do have this state senator, Melissa Hurtado, who's on the ballot. She hasn't raised a lot of money, but she is a somewhat known figure, a Latina in a district that is a very Latino district. And if she siphons away enough votes, if that splits the Democratic vote enough, you could very well have a situation where two Republicans advance. And that would be a huge embarrassment for Democrats because that is a targeted seat for them in November. That's a seat they think they can flip. And if they lose that opportunity entirely, that has national implications.
And David Valadao has been a really exceptional candidate over the years, overperforming a district that a lot of people think he should lose. And because he has backed Donald Trump in the past, you know, a lot of sort of hardcore Republicans don't like him, but a lot of folks in the district do.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is that if you only had one Democrat in the race, you could have seen shenanigans on the other side. This conservative challenger, Chris Mathis, who also goes by Mathis, he sort of does both, he was running to Valadao's right because of that impeachment vote that you mentioned. And so there could have been a way where Democrats could have elevated this hard right challenger, who probably would not be a good general election candidate in November. But again, because there's two Democrats, because they have to sort of get their own house in order, they can't mess around on the other side.
And remember, in California, the top two advance regardless of party, which is why you're able to see some of these shenanigans on both sides. Okay, let's talk about another interesting race that's happening, which is the race to replace Katie Porter in the House. Because she's running for the Senate, she can't run for the House. Even if she loses on March 5th, she can't go back and run for the House. And so here's a look at some of the people that are running. There is Scott Baugh, who is a Republican who almost beat her last time around. There's Democrats Dave Min, Democrat Joanna Weiss, and Republican Max Ukrapina. And this has gotten really nasty and really expensive on the Democratic side.
This is a seat that Democrats feel very nervous about because Katie Porter, who is a very formidable candidate, she only won that seat by 3 percentage points last cycle, and that's when she had a huge fundraising advantage over Scott Baugh, who was running again as a Republican. So the fact that she is now running for Senate, there are these two Democrats that are running in their place. Dave Min, State Senator Dave Min, really had kind of most of the Democratic establishment behind him, but then he got a DUI last spring. And what that has really done is change the nature of the race. You saw Joanna Weiss, who's a first-time candidate, a Democratic activist, get in to challenge him and argue that Democrats cannot afford to lose this seat. It's too risky to nominate somebody that has this arrest record. And what we've seen is just this, like, full-on mudslinging fest between these two candidates.
And millions of dollars, including millions of dollars from outside money from AIPAC in this race against Dave Min. So it's kind of unclear who is going to win that race. Also unclear who is going to win the race in the 30th district. This is replacing Adam Schiff because he also is giving up his House seat. This is a bright blue district, which means people want to be in this race because they could be in it for 30 years. We're talking about State Senator Anthony Portantino. Assemblymember Laura Friedman is running, as is former city attorney for Los Angeles Mike Fuhr. And Nick Melvoin is running as well, who is an LAUSD school board member, among other candidates, 12 people running for this district. How do you break this one down?
It is an everybody in the pool kind of situation. I mean, this is what happens when you have a deep blue seat vacant for the first time in 24 years in Los Angeles, which is an area with a lot of ambitious Democrats, is that there's a bottleneck, right, of how not enough jobs for all of these Democrats. So when one of these seats open up, you see all of these people jump into the race. And so the question is who can break out from the pack and consolidate? And then if they win that seat in November, you kind of have a job for as long as you want it because it is so solidly blue.
Yeah, you could be there for 30 or 40 years potentially. All right, now let's talk about another really interesting race, which is L.A. County District Attorney. George Gascon, a controversial figure here in Los Angeles, was a controversial figure when he did the same job in San Francisco. And there are 11 people running against him, including several people who technically work for him. How do you handicap this one? There's a lot of people that think that Gascon maybe makes the top two because he has the most name ID.
Well, I think that that's right. And he has so many challengers that I do think that somebody who has the name ID of Gascon and the institutional support, he has the L.A. County Democratic Party supporting him, the Labor Federation, the Los Angeles Labor Federation, the Los Angeles Times endorsed him. So there is that kind of those validators that are backing him. But the truth is that we've seen poll after poll that shows that he is actually quite unpopular in this city, which is why you see so many people running against him. The problem is with so many people running against him, they're all fighting over that share of the vote. And it's been hard to see any one candidate really break out and establish themselves as the obvious contender against him. We'll see after the primary on a man-to-man race what that means for Gascon. It might be a little bit harder to fend off all of this incoming when it's coming from just one person.
Yeah, although when you look and his approval rating is like 15% or something like that, that is tough for an incumbent to win, but depends on who's running against him. We will see on that. And by the way, if you want more information on all of that, I hosted a debate for that race. I hosted a debate for the 30th district. We had all the candidates for the 47th district come in. You can check out my YouTube page, youtube.com/AlexMichelson, for more detailed analysis and interviews with a lot of those folks. Let's get to another big story in California politics this week, which is another recall of Governor Gavin Newsom. We spoke with Ann Dunsmore, who is organizing this for Rescue California. Here's some of what she told me.
The top issue cited in the notice of intent that was served to the governor yesterday really were about the budget handling, but specifically the decision to give over 700,000 illegal immigrants free health insurance at a cost of $3 billion.
So they still need to collect enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. They are not using paid signature gatherers this time, which makes this a lot harder to do. The governor says he's taking this seriously. But right now, it seems like this is pretty unlikely to even qualify, right?
Right. I mean, remember the last time that they were able to qualify, it was because a judge had extended the amount of time that they could collect signatures. So that was a little bit of the stars aligning in this circumstance. And another thing to point out is that the last time there was this recall, it was right in the height of COVID restrictions. And a lot of it was focused on the executive actions that the governor took. The issues that we just heard about now, those are programs and the budget that he negotiates with the whole legislature. I mean, how much of this is going to be about Gavin Newsom's leadership when we're dealing about laws that have been passed by the entire representative government?
But while this recall thing comes out, there's a story that comes out about this bill, which was they set a minimum wage for fast food companies to go to $20 an hour. And there's a carve-out for Panera Bread, who the owner of which was a campaign donor to Gavin Newsom. Republicans in the legislature now demanding an investigation into how he got that carve-out. Tough politically for Governor Newsom.
I think that's right. Policy-wise, there may be good justification for this, but the issue is perception. And if this seems to reinforce a perception that people who have connections to elected officials get preferential treatment, there's nothing that gets under voter skin more. The question is that Republicans may cause a big stink about it, but there's not very many Republicans in Sacramento right now. So does this scandalette have legs? I think it matters if you see other people starting to criticize Governor Newsom, particularly those out of his own party.
And we got to know more about what exactly happened here. A lot of people, though, are going to be digging into what happened here. All right. We have gone through so much together through this process. We want to have a little bit of fun and get to know you a little bit better. You know, you've seen our personal issues game on this show before, but now that you're in the hot seat, we get to play it with you. Okay?
Okay.
So you ready? What is your favorite TV show?
30 Rock.
Go-to karaoke song.
Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Ooh. What's your favorite book?
Oh, my gosh. The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien.
Who is your favorite sports team?
Oh, it's the Dodgers.
And who is your favorite Dodger? Don't say Steve Garvey, because that's not fair right now.
Freddie Freeman. Got to say Freddie.
Who is your all-time favorite musical artist?
Well, it's the Queen. It's Beyoncé.
And what is it about Beyoncé you love so much?
What do you not love about Beyoncé? She just, you know, she does it all. And we're all grateful to be living in this Beyoncé era.
Really enjoyed those conversations with both Melanie and with Peter. And thankful to them for being with us throughout this process here on The Issue Is. And thank you to you for being with us throughout this process as well. If you want to be a little more informed, go back and listen to some of our other shows. We've got podcasts with many of the candidates, all of the Senate candidates. If you want to hear more about their positions, go out there and vote. Decisions are made by those who show up, and we hope that you will show up. We also hope you'll show up with us next week as we break down what you all decide. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is.